Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam. Streaming on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and at DCAUReview.com. Now, here's today's episode.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 112 of DCAU Review. I am Liam, and with me, as he always is Cal. And Cal, we are wrapping up our latest stay in the world of Metropolis, or the city of Metropolis, I guess I should say. We're wrapping up our Superman month.
That's right. We have somehow made it through the month of June, which did indeed follow the month of May and April and March. All of these months feel like years now, but congratulations. We've made it through. And we are wrapping up this month with a Season 3 episode of Superman the Animated Series, that being Obsession, which features the return of Toyman, which is exciting for multiple reasons. We'll talk about maybe a little bit later. This is not his final appearance in the DCAU, as we know that he comes back to make multiple appearances after this, but this is his final appearance in Superman the Animated Series.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting episode. It's an interesting concept. There's a bit of a twist and turn to the story of it, and we'll of course get to all those details, Cal. But before we do, I'm gonna go ahead and, as I always do, hit us with the official IMDb synopsis for this episode.
We don't do any unofficial stuff for this. It's official IMDb synopsises only. And I did not mention this, but this episode originally debuted back on November 15th, 1998. So we are just a little coming up on the 22-year anniversary of this episode.
There you go. And yes, this is the synopsis for the episode Obsession, which was written by Paul Dini, Andrew Duncan, and Ron Fogelman. Directed by Dan Reba, with music by Shirley Walker and animation by Coco/Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. A mysterious fashion model is stalked by an obsessed supervillain who is smitten with her. Okay, that's not IMDb's best work, Cal, so we're actually going to have to do a little bit of the heavy lifting in our plot section this week.
Yeah, we're gonna have to break it down, do a little more work. It's a good thing I stretched before we started tonight, because that was pretty pitiful. But yeah, this actually brings back the return of one Lana/Lana Lang, depending on your preferred pronunciation of her first name. So it's I prefer Lana. If are you Lana or Lana?
I'm Lana, because that's how it was pronounced on Smallville, and you know, you always hold on to Smallville. So
sure. That's what they say anyway. Yeah. All right. Well, I go with Lana just because it just flows easily, you know, more easy for me.
Hey, let's call the whole thing off. You know, you say Lana, I say Lana. Let's just call the whole thing off. But yes. Hey,
You got a song there. You're not careful. But yeah, we got the return of Miss Lang to the DCAU, as we mentioned earlier in the month. We covered the episode My Girl, which you can hear in the archives at DCAUReview.com. We just covered that one just a few episodes ago. But we have her returning, and she's got a fashion show that she is featuring in Metropolis. And wouldn't you know it, her star model happens to be this girl named Darcy. We find out very shortly that she is being targeted. It looks like she's trying to be kidnapped. The reveal shortly thereafter is that it is Toyman himself, who appears to be somewhat creepily obsessed with her. There's multiple attacks that try, you know, he sends a giant kangaroo, we'll talk about that in visuals, I'm sure, to her apartment. And as Clark is sort of trying to investigate, he sort of realizes he goes to her apartment. There's no food in her apartment. There's no clothes in her apartment, no pictures, no hint of who this girl is. But he's using his investigative skills. He's sort of deduced that there's something beyond what she's told the police and what she's been telling her her boss, Lana Lang. Of course, we find out that she is, in fact, spoiler alert, a robot. During the attack with the giant kangaroo, her face gets thrown into a mirror and she gets this like scratch, I guess, in her synthoid skin. So Lana happens to bump into her late at night at the Lana Lang Towers, and she's got a blowtorch that she's using on her face. There's a weird part, kind of twist, that suddenly Darcy sort of turns on Lana for some reason, and there's like a fight that ensues, and a fight between the two of them. Superman has to rescue Lana, and then in that brouhaha, Darcy is captured by Toyman, and then there's a final battle between Toyman and Superman Darcy realizes she's been programmed to not be able to actually kill Toyman. Despite these feelings mm-hmm. that she's developed, she's no longer this sort of sentient robot. She's become a robot with feelings and desires and wants to be separated from this person that created her, and but unfortunately her programming won't allow her to kill Toyman himself. So instead she destroys the helicopter that they're escaping in. And of course, spoiler alert again, we learn that she didn't somehow die in the helicopter crash, and she and who or whatever is in her suitcase will live to fight another day.
Yeah, that's something that's really interesting to me, because though we haven't reviewed some of those episodes, there's kind of a pattern of robots in the DCAU becoming sentient and defying their original programming with the Batman robot in Silicon Soul, or certainly Zeta later on, and here with Darcy. But my thing with this that I think irks me a little bit, maybe that's not the right word, but that bothers me a little bit about this plot, is you establish that obviously she must have some very sophisticated AI that the Toy Man has created for her. Sophisticated enough that she could learn and develop feelings independent of what was programmed into her. So she could overcome that part of her programming where she was apparently just supposed to be like a companion robot girlfriend for the Toy Man. But she can't overcome the part where he says she's not allowed to hit him. So it's like, why was that part of her programming so insurmountable compared to the rest of her programming?
Also, why does she have the ability to attempt to kill Lana, but not attempt to kill Toyman? He says at one point she doesn't have the circuitry to kill him, but does that mean she also can't kill anybody else, or it's just he programmed her so that she couldn't turn on him in that way? Yeah, the limitations of what the programming was and the explanation is sort of hazy at best, I would say.
Yeah, like it would have been better to me if it was more like the Batman Beyond suit, where Bruce has like the kill switch for it. Like if he had that just like disabled her hardware.
Sure.
I feel like that would make more sense than it just like it's not programmed into you. But I would assume running away and becoming a fashion model was also not in her programming, and she somehow overcame that. So.
Right. Yeah. And then towards the final battle, there's this, scene where she comes back. She attempts to like try and override her programming and kill him. She doesn't. Toyman says,
with a few small adjustments,
I'll never love you. Never.
I know there's a place for me in your heart. I just have to find it.
He has to say that he says, I know that there's a place for me in your heart. I just have to find it. And he takes his drill out, and very creepily the scene cuts. Mm-hmm. And then the next scene is her sort of sitting in this. We didn't mention it already, by the way, but she's definitely like a playoff of Barbie.
Yes.
So she's in this Barbie doll box in the next scene. and she's just kind of there. There's no restraints. There's doesn't appear to be anything holding her there. So you would assume that there have been some reprogramming done. But then in the very next scene, in the almost final scene of the episode, she then overrides the programming again and starts destroying the helicopter because she doesn't want to go with him. So it's very inconsistent.
Yeah, and again, it's funny because I think a lot of the setup to this episode is interesting because there's the mystery of who Darcy is. Obviously, at first, it's sort of just portrayed that, you know, Toyman is this kind of creepy fan. And then later, it turns out that there's actually like this secondary, darker connection that they have, that he created her, as you mentioned, and Lana kind of confronts her and she tries to kill Lana and sets the high rise, I guess the LL headquarters on fire, and then Superman comes in to save the day. I also don't quite get how Superman knew where Toyman was at the end. I don't remember Darcy like telling Lana, like, I'm going to the Toyman's headquarters behind that one billboard.
Yeah, in passing, she mentions the arcade. She says the Toyman kept her in the arcade, and okay, all he liked to do was play with toys.
Okay.
But are you to tell me that there's only one arcade in the city of Metropolis, or did we miss a scene where Superman flew and visited all of the arcades in the Metropolis area, or
just shaking down every arcade in the entire city?
Right. I don't know. That's a very good question. As to how he discovered exactly where she was. We've already talked about sort of the majority of the episode, but I'd be remiss not to bring up once again, because this was, if you recall, this was a plot point in another episode featuring Jimmy Olsen. But we get the return of Horn Dog Jimmy Olsen for this episode.
He can barely contain it. Like,
my goodness. He just can't stop himself.
You'd think he'd never seen a woman before.
LL offers a complete line of showstoppers.
I can't believe we're getting paid to do this.
Covering some fashion show? That's why I became a reporter, Jimmy.
Come on, Clark. You can't tell me you're not excited about interviewing Darcy Mason.
She's only a model. Besides, what's there to talk about? Eyeliner?
Watch out, Clark. You're going to burn a hole in those glasses.
What do you mean?
Well, the way you're staring at her. Or is it just the suit?
It's also impossible to tell, based on the way he dresses and talks and acts, how old Jimmy's supposed to be on this show. I would assume at least, like, 18. But
right.
Somewhere between, like, 18 and 21. Like, Dick Grayson age, I guess. And he's such a weird little creep.
His opening lines, that lines from that opening scene are just, it's just so creepy. And then he tries to project his horn dogginess onto Clark by saying that Clark is going to burn a hole in his glasses, which obviously is a funny joke based on, you know, Superman's heat vision powers.
Right.
But regardless, I could not go through this episode without bringing up that character again. I don't recall where we last left this version of the Jimmy Olsen character.
Maybe the Volcana episode, maybe.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right, which you can hear in the archives at DCAUReview.com if you want to hear the other further adventures of Horn Dog Jimmy Olsen,
Superman's horny pal.
Oh, man.
From here, I think we can dig ourselves out of this weird hole and just go ahead and give our scores here. Like I said, there's some elements about this plot that I like. If the execution had been better of the third act, I think it could be much higher. But as it stands, I gave it a 6 out of 10.
I gave it a very similar score. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I think the thing that made me score this a little bit higher is just how well, and we talked about it in the very first episode that we covered, Fun and Games. Again, check that out in the archives at DCAUReview.com. But just how well written this Toyman character is, especially in comparison to previous incarnations of the Toyman character. He is creepy AF. And on purpose. I mean, everything from his look, from the, you know, the plastered smile across his face that doesn't show any emotion no matter what is happening on the screen, to just the overall creepiness factor of his voice, which of course these are things we'll talk about in just a few moments, but just how well the character is written in such a creepy horror movie villain-esque way that just makes this character three-dimensional in ways that you probably wouldn't have if you had stuck with his original writing and the original way that this character was written in the comic books in the past. It's just, you know, we talked about that on the first episode. He was either sort of a short, fat guy that wore plaid and, you know, used toys in capers, or was a toy inventor, or he was the Super Friends version, which looked like a court jester. And, you know, I know that version was also in the comics for some time, but it, you know, again, his whole thing was, oh, he uses toys in different capers. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's going to wear out very quickly. But the fact that this is a very creepy man who, this is the second time, I mean, obviously the first time was a real life human and being Lois Lane, but the second time he's had a storyline that where he's obsessed over making a female his companion, essentially. And it is creepy and well written and made for a decent adversary for somebody who's clearly not really a threat to Superman.
Yeah, I do think that there is something there when you have this sort of diminutive guy in this creepy mask. He really does, on the surface level, you think, well, this seems like more of a Batman villain or something. But they come up with very creative ways where this guy can kind of be one step ahead, and some of the really creative gadgets, and we'll talk about in just a second here in visuals. They really do create a compelling character, and one that does become a believable foe for Superman, even if he's not a physical threat the way a Parasite or Bizarro or somebody is.
Absolutely.
All right, and we can move on here, Cal, to visuals, as we were just discussing. And this episode has a lot of really striking visuals. You mentioned how a lot of Toyman's dialogue, a lot of his motivations are kind of straight out of a horror movie. And there's a lot of those kind of, like, the way the scenes are shot, like, you'll get this, like, sort of looking, it'll be like the camera will almost be lower, and you're kind of looking up at the creature or at Toyman and in these very sort of strange ways with these shadows. They really create sort of a horror movie feel to a lot of this episode, even with something kind of silly like the kangaroo, the giant robot kangaroo. Like, they do that sort of like low angle shot looking up at the kangaroo as it's sort of menacingly staring down at Darcy. But then, of course, it has this goofy little smile on its face. Like, so they not only get some really creative horror elements in there, but they also kind of, in addition, use that sort of horror element for a little bit of comedy, a little bit of visual comedy as well.
Yeah, there's a couple spots. So in the very first scene, as we mentioned, during the fashion show, there are these three robots that are clearly designed as action figures that have been sent to try and capture Darcy. And at one point, Superman, one of them is a sheriff, and the only surviving one is the sheriff, and Superman literally knocks his head off. Later on, he returns back to the arcade where the villain is revealed to be Toyman, and he's literally holding his head in his hand, and Toyman asks him, you know, oh, so I suppose you ran into Superman, and they pan down and he's holding his head, and he uses his head to nod. The robot nods with his head in his hand. And then later on, when the robot reappears, he's actually completely headless and trying to attack Darcy and keep her from escaping. So yeah, there are definitely some horror movie elements of that. There's the sort of climax final battle between Superman and Toyman, which ends up being between Superman and a video game. Is Toyman is in this. 35 foot high chair, basically. The angles on that were done really, really well and made to make that look extremely creepy. And I think really the creepiest back-to-back scenes. One was one that you posted on our Instagram, which you can follow at DCAU Review if you're not already doing so, but posted that earlier this week. And that's this sort of scene. It's like a sepia-toned, in half in shadow or almost three-quarters in shadow, the reveal of Toyman, where he's talking about Darcy very creepily and he's riding this horse and shooting these guns in the air. It's very, very creepy. And then the following scene, once the cowboy returns, the sheriff returns, he has Darcy's robe in hand and he hands it over to Toyman, and Toyman creepily grabs it and just like smells it, and it's so creepy.
Yes.
Don't tell me, Sheriff, I can guess. Superman? What's this? Oh, Darcy. The Ridgemont, room 1002.
But it does, you know, I talked about the Toyman character being this horror movie-esque, you know, this plastered smile on his face that doesn't change. The fact that they made this guy into such a creep and really underlined the creepiness factor in many, many scenes in this.
Yeah, absolutely. That scene you mentioned kind of really early on in the episode, it opens with him sort of completely in shadow and he's stroking the hair of this sort of, I guess, regular sized Darcy doll, and then he sort of looks directly into the camera, and of course, and his face sort of comes out of the shadow as he reveals it. And there's just some really ominous about that character, and the character design, as we mentioned in the first episode, Fun and Games, that we reviewed, is just such a striking design. And I totally agree with you, Cal. This is to me, like, this is what Toyman should be if you want him to be like anything other than a kind of a punchline or a background character.
For sure.
And that's one of the things I think that this series was good at, was kind of giving some of Superman's rogues gallery a little bit of a shot in the arm in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There were we have some visual Easter eggs to talk about from this week, Liam. I assume that you probably pulled a couple of them. Did you catch anything?
The biggest one for me was that in one of the puppets that is cheering along with Toyman appeared to very much resemble Scooby-Doo.
All right. There you go. There's one. Well, would you be surprised to hear that another superhero made a cameo in this episode?
Oh, really?
Yes. In fact, if you go back to the very first scene and a pan shot through the crowd, if you're not looking for it, you will miss it. But there's a pan shot through the crowd as Clark and that horn dog Jimmy Olsen are standing there. They pan past a gentleman wearing a red sweater with a yellow collar and these very, very familiar eyes drawn. And that would be a cameo by a young Billy Batson, who is one of the reporters standing in the crowd, or at least it certainly very much appears to be Billy Batson. He has a little notebook that he's writing in also. So he doesn't appear to be like a 9-year-old child. Like maybe he's 13 or 14. So I don't know if it's straight canon or if it's just a little nod, but clearly definitely supposed to be Billy Batson. Also, some of the models walking the runway, they use the same character models on the episode Mean Seasons with Calendar Girl on the new Batman Adventures. A couple of the models actually happen to be Calendar Girl's henchmen. They end up being her Chippendale henchmen, so I thought that was interesting. Paul Dini makes a little visual, and I believe Eric Radomski was the other. They actually take Darcy's robe from her as she's about to step on stage. So that was another visual Easter egg there. But those are always super fun to pull out here. But I think it's time that we talk about the main visual thing that we mentioned before, and that is the giant kangaroo. Now, if you recall, when we last reviewed a Toyman episode, we talked about the giant duck and just how fantastic the giant duck was.
Yes.
Liam, where do you stand on giant duck versus giant kangaroo?
I think I'm still gonna go with giant duck.
Same.
Just because that scene was so much more epic. It's, you know, it attacks Mannheim's guy, Superman shows up, they have this big grand fight. I just think it's more of an epic moment. The kangaroo, while still interesting, like I said, I got a big kick out of them sort of playing the horror movie music and using that sort of horror movie camera angle, but with this cartoon kangaroo with this goofy little smile on his face. I thought that was clever. I thought some of the little weapon, like that was clever. The idea of him having the pouch, where he was going to stuff Darcy when he kidnaps her. I thought that was clever. I got a kick out of the end of that scene where we get like the snobby rich lady who parked in a handicap space or whatever. And the doorman's like, you can't park here. And she, tells him off. And then immediately her car gets crushed by the falling kangaroo. I got a big kick out of that. I did enjoy the kangaroo and some of the other visuals. You already mentioned the cowboy and the spaceman and the knight that we meet at the start of the episode. But yeah, I think I'm still on Team Duck as far as my favorite Toyman weapons.
Same. The duck rules. Sorry, the judges have ruled that duck is the victor. Kangaroo, better luck next time. I do appreciate that the kangaroo not only had a tail that he whipped and used like a real kangaroo uses, but also he was wearing boxing gloves. So.
That's true.
Visually, it was at least almost equal there. But that duck sound also that you will never forget gave it the other one. The last thing visually that I wanted to talk about, other than I did notice that on the side of Lana Lang's building, there was a mention of Gotham. So we know that there. I mentioned last time on My Girl that it would have been interesting to see a Bruce Lana romance happen. So. Maybe they were laying the seeds here for that, and it never occurred. But what about the super clap, Liam?
I literally, in my notes, no joke, just wrote in all caps, super clap! !
Same.
It's so cool.
I literally wrote super clap! !
All caps. All caps. Super clap! !
Love it.
So cool. Because we've established that Superman doesn't really use the super breath until Justice League, it appears, in that I can remember anyway. Obviously, we haven't reviewed every single episode of Superman, but from my memory, he doesn't really use super breath in Superman the Animated Series. So when there's a big fire there, I'm like, well, is he going to do the big twisty thing that he does? Or how's he going to put it out? And instead, he just tells Lana to stand back and claps his hands together, and the sonic vibrations blow all of the fire out into the sky and it dissipates. I thought that was a really clever way, because I mean, goodness knows, even in just the episodes we've reviewed, we've seen a lot of different ways of Superman putting out fires, and they actually came up with a completely unique one that I don't think I'd ever seen before.
Yeah, that was great. It made me wonder which reckless architect decided not to put sprinklers in this building, by the way. It's a 30-story high-rise with not a single sprinkler to be found. But yes, the super clap was fantastic, and just really cool visualization. You see all the windows blow out and the sonic boom occurs, and it's just really, really great stuff.
Yeah, and then I guess the final little visual note is the fight between Superman and the Death Fist Ninja, which
yes.
I think it's a cool, I guess it's kind of a Mortal Kombat / Power Ranger looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's supposed to be a direct homage to anything in particular, but I find this interesting because obviously we haven't reviewed those episodes, but we have established that, like, Luminous exists in this world. So there's, like, there is such a thing as, like, holograms that can punch you by this point in Superman. But, like, did Toy Man steal this technology from Luminous? Or is Luminous just, like, some a-hole and anybody with half a brain can make holograms that can... that can hit people in this universe?
I mean, where the original technology came from, I don't know, but clearly does claim ownership of creating Death Ninja, because he says, "Enjoy my latest toy," sounding like he was the person that created it. So I don't know. Maybe Luminous is just a big dummy. I don't know.
How's that for a fan theory? Maybe Toy Man really created all of Luminous's gear, and he just stole it from the Toy Man at some point and was using it all this time. How's that for a fan theory?
I mean, it makes as much sense as most fan theories do, so I'm on board with it. I'm ready to take that. I mean, and who's to say that Darcy wasn't technology stolen from Carl Rossum, you know? All the androids are, I mean, she certainly had some visual traits that look similar to the Rossum robot. So who knows?
We would know for sure if she just answered, "I'm fine" to everything.
Good point.
Yeah, but I guess we can give our scores here. Like I said, I really liked a lot of the visuals of this episode, Cal, and I gave it a very strong 9 out of 10.
I gave it the exact same score, 9 out of 10. You know, it's strong, it's great. It didn't have any ducks in it, so that's the only reason I didn't give it a perfect 10.
that's fair. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think the only thing that, as much as I think visually I liked the Death Fist Ninja, Toy Man having holograms didn't really fit with all, like, everything else he does is robots.
So right.
Just having this random, like, electrified cage with a hologram that can punch you, and can not only punch you but punch you hard enough to hurt Superman, was kind of, I don't know, it just didn't quite gel with the rest of the Toy Man motif to me. But yeah, overall some great visuals all around, and hashtag super clap.
Love it.
All right, and we can move on here, Cal, to music. Music this week is by Shirley Walker herself, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't have access to the soundtrack for this one, at least not the soundtrack alone.
Yeah, another one. Yep. Unfortunately, another one that has not been released.
Yeah. So I only have limited notes on music this week. As we mentioned, the Toy Man does have his own theme, and that sort of plays, as we mentioned, in that first scene where he's in shadow and stroking the hair of the doll and all that. It's sort of this really, it's again, this very ominous, creepy thing. It's just like piano, and there's some xylophone in there, and then like a flute or something starts playing as it goes. It feels very much, I mean, you can tell, I think, that it's Shirley Walker music, just because it has a very like, this could fit with like Mad Hatter or somebody too. Like, it's a very recognizable theme.
Oh, Darcy, Darcy, so beautiful. Soon you'll be all mine.
Yippee! Yeehaw!
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a creepy, it adds to the creepy vibe. It really just feels, it's one of those musical pieces, like you would say, that fits Joker or Mr. Freeze or, you know, Clayface or whoever. Any of those themes that are trademarks of the villains themselves, that just kind of add that extra layer of character to the villain. So totally agree. Another great piece, Shocker, by the late, great Shirley Walker.
Yeah, and because we don't have access to the direct soundtracks, it's hard. A lot of other fine music throughout the episode, it kind of blends in the background a little bit, but I did like the kind of techno fast-paced song and like heavy drums that comes with the Death Fist Ninja fight. Like, there's some good video game-ish music in that scene.
Allow me to introduce Death Fist Ninja, my latest game. You won't find this in the stores.
Yes, there is. I did notice that as well. It plays it up. And there's, I mean, I wish it would be one of those tracks that would be nice to hear in isolation to probably truly appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But that was the only other song that I sort of made note of that sort of made any lasting impact to me.
Yeah, and yeah, so for those reasons, like I said, I think there's some good stuff in there. You wish you could kind of do your due diligence and be able to listen to it. So. As we have and will continue to say on every episode, to Warner Brothers, La La Land Records, whoever we have to beg, we'd love for you to release the full soundtracks for all of these DCAU shows so we could, you know, better... First of all, we want to pay you, and second of all, we want to, you know, we want to be able to more fully appreciate the work put in by these incredible composers and musicians. But, yeah, for all those reasons, I gave music 6 out of 10. I like it, and... some standout moments, but nothing necessarily that blew my mind.
Yeah, I gave it 7 out of 10, and again, I gave that based on the Toy Man theme and having heard it, obviously, in the prior episodes and everything that we just talked about as far as that being just the signature for that character itself. I when I think about this episode, when I think about the Toy Man character, I think about that theme, and it really creates that, like I said, that extra layer of depth for the character. So that's the reason why I gave it just a tick higher.
Makes sense to me. And that'll bring us to our final category here, Cal. And that is, of course, voice acting. We don't have a huge cast this week. It's mostly guest characters. Of course, we have David Kaufman as the horn dog himself, Jimmy Olsen, in a minor role. But aside from him... We have a few notable guests. As we mentioned, Jolie Fisher returns as Lana. We just talked about her a couple weeks ago, and we had a lot of good things to say about her in that episode. We don't really get a lot of her this time. You know, she's at the start of the episode, sort of narrating the fashion show, and then she has this confrontation with Darcy. But we don't get as much as her. She's not as much of a focal point in this episode. But still nice to have her back, and she does a fine job. We have Nancy Travis playing Darcy, who has been in quite a few movies over the years. Most recently, she's on that show that stars Tim Allen that's been on for like a decade, but I don't know anyone who's watched it. It's been on like multiple networks. It never gets canceled, and yet, like, I've never met a single person who watches it, but clearly people watch it, because it's been on for, like, 8 years.
Right. Since it's definitely in syndication now.
Yeah. So, I mean, good, you know, more power to you if you like the show. I just personally, I've never seen it, and I don't know anyone who has seen it, but I believe she plays the wife on that show.
Okay.
Again, she's a lot of her stuff is more robotic, I guess, which is probably by intent. I like some of the stuff with her playing off a Toy Man, but I don't think she does like a great job either.
Yeah, my critique is that it falls in the middle, and maybe I'm overthinking this, that if, like, by falling in the middle, it's like, well, she is a robot, but she's sort of breaking her programming to become more human, so it's leaning a little more human. But I wish it was either one or the other, or there was a stark contrast maybe between going back and forth between the two. I don't know, but it wasn't, I was not blown away by the performance, and I was just, it was just kind of like, eh. It was okay.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it necessarily, but nothing super standout. And because she's such a focal point of the episode, I think that brings it down a little bit. But we do have Bud Cort returning as Toy Man, and he is pretty darn great in this episode.
My gosh. Yeah, he puts on a clinic for being creepy. Like I said, creepy AF. Every mm-hmm. line that he delivers is great. Of course, they put a bit of an effect on his voice just because it's, you know, it sounds like he's talking inside of a full helmet mask. But it, I mean, every line that he delivers is just something creepy. You know, he says at one point he's flying this helicopter and they're spying on the kangaroo as it attacked and attempted to capture Darcy. And he looks over in the passenger seat and he's talking to this stuffed bear and he tells the bear, "There's no need to curse, Teddy."
Him again. It appears we have a rival. Now, no need to curse, Teddy. We'll take care of Superman in due time. Nobody's going to come between my Darcy and me.
But then he follows that up with no one's going to come between me and my Darcy. I thought that was super creepy, as I already mentioned before, where he's talking to Darcy as she tries to pull the trigger. He says, "I know there's a place for you in my heart. I just have to find it." And then he revs up the drill part there. You know, he's just, every line that he has is super creepy and delivered with such precise voice acting. It's done so well. You know, he really carries this episode.
Agreed. And just like his reactions at the end as Superman is kind of outwitted him and starts to kind of guess the next move that the next punch the ninja's gonna throw, and Toyman sort of realizes what's happening, and you kind of hear the panic in his voice begin to build. And yeah, he does a really, really great job. And as you mentioned, this is his last appearance in Superman the Animated Series, but he did get to come back one or two other times in other shows, which I'm sure we'll cover down the line. But yeah, he does a great, great job and in this episode. And yeah, and before we get to the main event, just a note, starring as the Death Fist Ninja slash the guy who tries to help Darcy with her bag at the end of the episode, we have Townsend Coleman, who folks might know in his animated roles. He's done lots of voiceover work for, you know, major TV networks like NBC. But he's also the voice of another great big blue superhero. That, of course, being the Tick animated series from the mid-90s, a show that holds a dear place in our hearts, I know, Cal.
Yeah, maybe one week or month when we're doing Elseworlds, we'll do an Elseworlds Tick review month, because that show is so funny and so way ahead of its time and so great. And Townsend Coleman is just like, he's a tremendous voice actor. It's just very odd. Another one of those ones, it's like, this guy is a very well-known voice actor. He was obviously very, very well-known, especially mm-hmm. during that period of time. He was the from my recollection, the voice of must-see TV NBC Thursdays, I believe. He did, like mm-hmm. you mentioned, he did a lot of promo work for them. So this guy is a very famous voiceover actor. So it's another one of those where it's like, man, how did Andrea Romano decide or call him up and say, "Hey, we need you to come in and be the voice of the hologram that just literally makes grunting noises."
It's wild that's you know, the favor she was able to call in here and there, and the great talent she would pull in even for smaller roles is pretty wild. But I got a kick out of that when I was looking over the voice cast for this episode, and I went, oh yes, of course, who else would be the voice of the grunts of the ninja, but well-known voice actor Townsend Coleman. And then, yeah, we have Tim Daly as Superman. He doesn't have a lot to do because, as we mentioned, this episode focuses so much on Darcy and Toyman and even Lana to an extent. But I do think Superman has some genuinely funny moments in here. Like we said, him being so sort of sarcastic and dismissive of Horny Jimmy is really funny to me. And I liked seeing Clark as the get to be a journalist, be a little bit of an investigator there, and him sort of going to Darcy's apartment and having this conversation with her. I thought he did a good job there. And then maybe one of my favorite parts of the whole episode is there's these two large toy soldiers standing outside of the arcade that Toyman is holed up in, and they shout halt, friend or foe when anyone walks up, and Superman walks in, they shoot at him, he blows them up with his heat vision, and then right after they shout friend or foe and he destroys them, he just goes foe. And keeps flying. And I was like,
yeah,
hey, Superman
great.
gets to be a little cheeky, gets to throw out a little action hero, a one-liner there.
Yeah, a little sass to him there, you know. He destroyed those robots without any, they're shooting bullets at him, so it was no big deal, and just ran through and threw his little sassy whip out there at them. But yeah, that was good. I had that one written down as well. He doesn't have a whole lot, whole lot of heavy lifting altogether. A lot of it's punching. A significant portion is the battle between him and the Death Fist Ninja. But overall, he does a good job. I think that this is obviously the third season, so he's had plenty of time to sort of work out the kinks in the Superman voice and get familiar with the character, and he seems right at home between doing more Clark almost in this episode, I think, than he does Superman. So I would agree that this is a good performance by Tim Daly.
Agreed. And for all those reasons, like I said, I like most of this cast a whole lot. I gave voice acting 9 out of 10 just because, like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of the Darcy performance. Again, not that she was terrible or anything, but I think especially playing off this incredible Toyman performance, I just think if you had something with a little more oomph to it, it would have been really, really special. And as it is, like I said, I think everybody's mostly very good, but that one just took it down a little bit of a notch for me.
Yeah, I literally had the same score, and literally for the same reason. if you didn't know any better, you would think that we were related. For that same reason, I think if Darcy's performance had been a little more consistent or just a little bit like better, because she was the main focal point of it, especially that scene with her and Lana, it's obvious that for somebody, as we mentioned, it was so impressive in her view in My Girl, and having to kind of carry that, juxtaposed against Darcy, it's like, ugh, this is like night and day as far as the level of talent here, it seems, or at least the performance given, maybe not the level of talent, but the performance given for that particular episode. So gave it a score of 9 out of 10.
Well, there you go. And that will bring us to our final scores here. And tallying everything up this week, Cal, it looks like I have a final score of 30 out of 40 for this episode.
Nice. I just have a tick higher there. I have a final score of 32 out of 40 for this week's episode.
Well, very good. I would say I would give this a thumbs up for rewatchability, even though I think we both had some issues with the structure, the payoff of that third act, obviously. Not only Toyman, but Darcy comes back in a later episode of a certain DCAU cartoon. So, I mean, this episode does have some implications going forward for other episodes. And again, I think just for the fun Toyman gadgets and for Bud Cort's performance, I think even if this episode isn't a home run in every category, that kind of makes it worth watching again.
Yeah, that too. I mean, plus we mentioned that Paul Dini is one of the writers on this episode, and I mean Paul's stories, even if they're not perfect, are always entertaining, at least. And the entertainment factor in this episode sort of makes up, I think, where the plot may fall a little bit short. So yeah, I would give this a thumbs up for rewatchability as well.
Well, awesome. And that will begin to wrap us up this weekend. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you happen to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, we thank you for that. If you're able to, we would love for you to give us a review or give us 5 stars. That does help us. It kind of bumps up our show in the all-important search algorithms. And, we'd love to have more people listening and We'd appreciate that if you have the time. And other than that, Cal, I guess it's time to wrap up and talk about what we'll be reviewing next week as we start a new month.
Absolutely. And I have a feeling that they, if the listeners had been following us on our social media accounts at DCA Review on Twitter and on Twitter and Instagram, they may have already had a clue as to what it is we would be covering for next month. But we are excited, Leanne, to talk about for the month of July, we will be going back to Dakota.
That's right. In fact, this may not be a shock to the system if you have been paying attention to our social medias. But yes, we will be returning to the world of Static Shock for the month of July. We're excited to go back. We've only been there once before. And we'll be kicking it off with the season 3 premiere, Hard as Nails.
There we go.
Static and Batman teaming up yet again. So a fun way to kick it off. And I'm really excited to hear that Little Romeo song. So a lot to look forward to as we move back into Dakota City for another stay. But that will wrap us up for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next week, I'm Liam.
And I'm Cal.
And we'll be back next week with another episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.